Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips. It is me, your boy Brian, always joined by my fantastic co-host Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Living the dream every day. And by that I mean buying a house is one of the most frustrating experiences I think human beings could get. It's definitely top five frustrating experience
there. Yeah, it's one of those things, like, you put so much effort into it going into the process and throughout the process. And then you're like, whenever you're done, you're like, cool, this is our house now. And then it just doesn't stop. Well, you have to make sure the house is furnished. And then you have to make sure the house is painted how you want it to be and make sure it looks exactly how you want it to be. And then you have to make sure there's no issues, get anything fixed. Like, I know you said specifically yours has the oil tank in the ground. You guys are talking about eventually bringing that out of the ground, which is obviously a good idea.
Yeah,
things like that, just like little things here and there. And I mean, maybe I'm just a high stress person. I mean, I am a high stress person.
Well, but me too, though. So this
it just kind of adds up.
Roadmap.
Like me personally, I had at least two or three times where it was just like everything was like pile, and then I hit my wall, and I was like, I just need nothing right now. I just need just sleep or something, and just not.
I'm close. I'm damn near. If these people from the mortgage company ask me one more stupid question, I swear I might snap. Okay, I'm this close. And like, not only, fun fact for you, do we have one oil tank in the ground? We got two. There's two of them bad boys. They got an empty one at the front of the house that they just left in the ground, because that's what you do with those.
All right,
and
then
they got a new oil tank and put it in the ground. I don't know what we're doing here, people.
I don't know why you wouldn't just not put it in the ground.
Well, I mean, old Levittown, for those of you that know anything about Levittown, PA, or don't, Levittown, pretty much all the houses look the same, which was kind of the point back when, I believe it was World War II? Either way, one of the major wars, everybody was coming home, all the soldiers, and people were like, oh crap, there's nowhere for them to live. So we have to put up this really vast neighborhood outside of a major city really fast. So make all the houses look the same. So everything about them pretty much is the same at the base. So the oil tanks are usually in the same spot. Now, after time, people realized oil tanks can leak. And when things leak into the ground, that's bad for the environment. Now, here's the thing about old Levittowners. Is they think the oil tank on the outside of the home looks ugly, and they don't care about the environment because they're not going to be around for it to go to shit. So they're putting it back in the ground because, I don't know, looks better. To me, it looks weird to have two pipes sticking out of your front lawn.
I don't know. I kind of don't really hate the look of it being on the outside.
It's just
a part of your house. Like, it's not like weird.
Yeah. And not only that, but it's going to be behind the fence that you built. No one in the front of the house is going to see it. If somebody, you'd obviously trust someone enough to be in your backyard, I sure hope they're not judging you for having an oil tank on the side of your house. Okay?
An oil tank on out of the ground? What's wrong with you?
Could you imagine having that much faith and trust and friendship in a person to invite them to your backyard, which does involve them traversing through your entire home to get to the backyard and looking at the oil tank on the side of the house and going, wow, an oil tank on the side of the house? Get out of my damn house. Leave.
You don't want to just keep that in the ground?
You don't want to just keep your mouth shut? Get out of my house. See you later. we're not doing this. Yeah, but that's a little stressful right now. But luckily, Ellie's pretty level-headed about this. So we have a fine balance here where I'm going to lose my mind, but she'll be fine. Other than that, that's pretty much everything consuming my life at the current moment. What about you? I mean, I guess
with the Spartan race.
Oh, yes. And trying to figure out, man, you ever, I'm sure maybe some of our listeners have these moments. I'm not sure. I hope you don't, for those of you who are listening. You ever have those moments where just enough happens where you go, Man, I really am stupid.
Like, we should preface this by letting everybody know. The other week when we said we were going to do a Spartan race, we did follow through with that. We signed up for a Spartan race.
You're damn right we did.
And then about 12 hours later, Brian called me informing me that he is going to be in Vermont on the day that we signed up for this.
A wedding. So I can't really get out of it.
Yeah, now he's going through the process of trying to email them and save us as much money as possible to not have to not have to pay all this money on switching to a different race.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And
the race is on.
Yeah, well, we're
depends on when and how much money we spend on.
we're doing it all right, folks. Now, if it's a financially smart decision after the mistake I made, no, it is not. But by golly, we said we're doing it on the podcast, and we're doing it. Damn it. Yeah, that was this is one of those moments where you really sit back and you go, wow, the stupidity truly is endless. It just can go for forever. I feel like everybody has those days. I'd like to think
it happens,
dude. That day, Saturday, that day was just beating me down. I was just beaten down by that day, and then the birds won, and like I took a step back, and I was like, okay, so I had to suffer today for the birds to move on to the NFC Championship. Fine. Now, if I have to do this for them to go to the Super Bowl, look, they won one in 2017. I'd like a day where that doesn't happen to me, personally. Is that selfish? Possibly. I don't know. I can't do this again. Just this far away. But speaking of other sports, buddy, what happened today in the history of sportsdom?
So I do have something golf-related here.
Oh, here we go.
1999 on this day, which would be January 24th for those that are listening the day this drops. 1999, David Duval eagles the 18th hole for a final round 59 to win the Bob Hope Chrysler Classic at PGA West and becomes only the third player to fire a sub-60 round ever.
Funny enough, PGA West, same course they played for the Amex they'll be talking about. So
wow, look at that.
I guess they just play at that course this time of year every year. So,
looking
back, that's actually an interesting question. I wonder if that's obviously the names change as everything.
Yeah, sponsors and everything change.
Yeah, but like, do you think the schedule's changed all that much as to like what golf courses they go to?
I don't know. That'd be something to look into, though.
I guess clearly not so much if they're still playing the PGA West course from 1999 to now.
Yeah.
Interesting. Uh-huh. What else you got for me?
Well, not all of us are Eagles fans, and living the dream right now. So
that is true.
I had to take a little trip down memory lane back to 2016 on January 24th, when in the NFC Championship game, the Carolina Panthers beat the Arizona Cardinals into the ground, 49-15 to go on to the Super Bowl, which we don't need to talk about what happened in that Super Bowl, but at least we had, like, the NFC Championship game and the divisional round that year were probably the most fun I ever had watching Panthers football, because we just demolished the Seahawks and the Cardinals back-to-back weeks. Yeah. And I was riding so high going into the Super Bowl. And then Von Miller just crushed every single one of my hopes and dreams.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And I've never liked him since.
which is really sad, because I, like, from all things, he's a pretty likable dude. But I get it. He almost single-handedly won that Super Bowl for Denver. But man, I remember
it
that
sucks
Arizona
because every
game.
Time someone brings it up, I have to. They're like, Peyton Manning beat you, and I'm like, no, Peyton Manning did not beat us. He played like garbage in that game.
Yeah, he did not play well. If I remember,
it was literally, it was Von Miller single-handedly won that game, and that's tough to handle. But we're not there. We're at the NFC Championship game, 49-15. Just Luke Kuechly had himself a day that day. I remember he had a pick six in that game. But yeah, just a little trip down memory lane for those of us that aren't riding high on the birds going to the NFC Championship.
Yeah, I remember that Arizona game just being an absolute throttling.
Yeah, it started off fast for the Panthers, and it just never stopped, and I had a great time.
I think the Seahawks game beforehand went the same way. It was like
exactly the same, yeah.
They got out early and just did not look back. No,
well, that was Cam's MVP year, so he was just on something different. Ever since we've had nothing at the quarterback position. So
I got to tell you, the Cam Newton drop off was drastic. I'm not sure how you go from being an MVP to being mediocre to then just being bad.
Yeah.
In the span of like 3 years. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's real sad because we could have had some good years.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. If he stayed the course and like kept his talent level high, definitely could have had plenty of good years.
Would have been nice. But we're in the present. Eagles are in the NFC Championship game. Big Cock Brock's in the NFC Championship game.
Oh man.
I gotta ask what your feelings are going into it. It's gonna be on Sunday, so it's happening before our next episode. So before we get into golf, what are your feelings on we'll even say the AFC Championship game too. We'll start with that one and then we'll go NFC since you're a Birds fan. What do you think? Chiefs Bengals.
Dude,
another good matchup.
It's really hard to look at what Joe Shiesty and the Bengals are doing right now. That's the swaggiest white dude on planet Earth right now. That man is just oozing swag. Did you see the video of he did the Pledge of Allegiance for his mom because his mom's a teacher? Was in a Super Mario crew neck. And his mom was like, and we have our pledge guest here today, Joe Burrow. And he's just there like, yeah, that's me. And I was like, that dude just dropped his nuts all over the Buffalo Bills. And now he's helping kids say the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm sorry. And I like the Chiefs, like what they got going with Andy Reid, former Eagles head coach, what they got going with Travis Kelce, obviously Jason Kelce's brother. I like what they got going on in Kansas City. No one is beating those in the AFC, at least. Nobody's beating that team right now, Cincinnati. Just no one's
tough. Yeah, their defense is playing really well. They got a great defensive line. I don't know. That's a toss-up for me. That's definitely a coin flip game for me, yeah.
I think it does matter about Patrick Mahomes' health, more important.
Oh, yeah, with his high ankle sprain.
Yeah. Because those are always confusing. You don't know if that high ankle sprain is like a month-long situation.
Yeah. He says he's going to play. I will say this. I'll give you my two teams. You said Bengals. I'm gonna say my two teams, and then we'll get into yours for the NFC since you're an Eagles fan. Honestly, at the moment, obviously it would be great for the Eagles to win for the city of Philadelphia because that's right about where I live. But I am not cheering for the Eagles at the moment. I am cheering for Big Cock Brock because I need Mr. Irrelevant to win a Super Bowl.
That'd be
because that would just be there. That'd be the greatest 30-30 of all time.
Ever.
And then I'm also cheering for the Bengals out of the AFC for one reason and one reason only, and it's nothing to do with Joe Burrow. It is the fact that after they won in the division, not the divisional round, the wild card round, after they beat the Ravens, did you see what they did on the Jumbotron?
No.
They played Sweet Victory from SpongeBob on the Jumbotron. Immediately after they beat the Ravens. And I can't not cheer for that team.
Man, they won the Bubble Bowl. Damn it. How are you supposed to compete with that?
So I'm hoping for a Mr. Irrelevant Joe Shiesty Super Bowl. Obviously, if the Birds make it, I'll be happy too because I'm from Philadelphia. But like that would be a great Super Bowl to watch, and there'd be so many good storylines going into that game. Plus Christian McCaffrey, former Panther. Love to see him get a ring because he deserves it after dealing with whatever was going on in the Panthers organization in the past few years.
Yeah, you know, it's really hard to root against Brock Purdy right now. It's such a cool story. He literally missed Mr. Irrelevant this last draft.
Yeah.
Is now playing in the championship. He's a rookie. He looked perfectly fine in the playoffs. Not just perfectly fine, but like good. Obviously, some mental errors here and there, but like nothing. Incredibly glad he looked better than Dak Prescott, and Dak Prescott's been called the messiah of the Cowboys organization
for six years
now. Oh my god, he's terrible.
Dak Prescott's horrible.
But like you see, you have a guy like Dak Prescott, whoever everybody in Cowboys land in Jerry World is like, this is our guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Brock Purdy making less mental errors than Dak Prescott, and he's a rookie.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy. Who's Mr. Irrelevant this draft is in the NFC Championship game before Dak Prescott.
Yeah. So funny.
Like,
and
it's such a cool story. It's incredible. Yeah,
and I'm so excited. Like, I'm gonna be locked in to 49ers Twitter and everything 49ers this offseason to hear what's going on with Trey Lance, because they gave up 3 first round picks for Trey Lance.
But how? But
guess
how
what he hasn't done yet? Brought you to the NFC Championship game. Like,
how do you say, like, especially if, and I'm going to knock on wood because heaven forbid, especially if the Niners do get to the Super Bowl, and hell, if they even win it, how can you look at Brock Purdy and be like, yeah, sorry, we gave up a little bit too much for Trey Lance. You're back on the bench.
Yeah, you just got to cut your losses. You got to cut your losses, yep. Trade him for a first round pick. That's it. Because you can still get a first round pick for him. With how many teams are looking for quarterbacks right now, you could get a first round pick for Trey Lance. And you just got to cut your losses at that point.
You have to. Because not like even obviously we're just talking about 2 young quarterbacks, but Brock Purdy is younger than Trey Lance. Mm-hmm. Not by much, obviously.
By like 3 years, I think.
Yeah. So like,
which is a significant amount in the NFL.
Especially if in this guy's first year, he's going to have this amount of playoff success. Not just regular season success, but playoff success. You have to. Like, obviously, I know what you gave up for Trey Lance, but you have to cut your losses and be like, look, the big cock Brock is, you know, we can't say no to this. However,
locked in, though.
The Birds are still going to win. It's really hard to discount this is coming from somebody who was very cautious about being obsessed with Jalen Hurts. I didn't know what we had there. I was basically saying I need him to prove it. Well, I just got to eat my servings as to my opinion there, because he proved it. He is, I don't know if there, I feel like there's a lot of good MVP candidates, but I do feel like he's up there. I don't know if he is the MVP, but obviously you have him playing well and being able to be mobile, run the ball, and you have AJ Brown, who just broke the single season receiving yards in Eagles history. Just, you put the ball up there, it's almost like throwing to Megatron. Obviously not, I'm not comparing the two at all, but it's almost like that. He's probably coming down with it because he's taller, stronger than any of the corners that are guarding him. You have fast Batman in Devontae Smith, although every time he has the ball and there's a safety nearby, I fear for his life. He's so small. He looks so small out there, man. I don't know how to feel. And then you got Miles Sanders, who's just a fantastic running back, and I'm glad he's still with the organization. But then the defense, dude. Hassan Reddick, excuse me? T for Temple U, University? God. The Eagles team, I just think all around, is the better team. However, lightning in a bottle. We saw it happen with the Eagles in 2017. They beat a lot of teams that were a lot better than them on paper. So,
if Big Cog Brock comes into Philly on Sunday night and wins, he's winning the Super Bowl.
You got it.
Because there's no bigger stage, in my opinion, like than an NFC Championship game in Philadelphia. No way. Like,
dude, my gosh. That's, winning a road playoff game, NFC Championship in Philadelphia is almost as stressful as a Super Bowl, I would have.
Like, they both have really good defenses, but I am just praying for a shootout in this game because it would be so fun to watch with all of the stars that each team has.
And I think it's possible due to the fact that both defenses, at least like the last couple of weeks in the regular season, weren't looking awesome.
No.
Kind of Swiss cheeses. Obviously, they both look like they've turned it around a little bit in the playoffs here, but the Eagles only played one game, and it was against Daniel Jones. Who, Brock Purdy is better than right now. I'll say that gladly.
He also has more weapons.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I like what Brian Daboll and the Giants are doing with what they have right now. It's just they need more weapons. It is what it is. But, I'm going Birds, Cincy.
Okay.
I like it. However, I'm still afraid of Joe Shiesty, no matter. That man scares the bejesus out of me. He's so cool. I just want to be his friend.
So cool, calm and collected.
He's so cool. When that video came out of him in warmups throwing the ball and then like kind of spinning around.
Oh, dude, ice.
And it was an automatic dot on down the sideline. You knew the game was over.
Yeah. And he's doing that to Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, it's tough. It's tough.
he's out there basically just having a fun time throwing dots.
Yeah.
Without even looking at where the ball went after he threw it. It was a dime.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 30-yard dime on the sideline. Yes, I know it was warm-ups and there was nobody rushing him, obviously, but that's still cool as hell. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. I'm scared. But, you know, we still have to figure out what happens in the NFC Championship game. However, as much as we do love talking about football, and boy, do we are a golf podcast. So let's get into that golf. Got a little bit about the Amex here, and then we get to talk about some drama going on with Tiger Woods. Obviously, I feel like you know who's on the other side of that drama. I don't think I have to say that out loud. And then talking a little bit of fantasy golf, or for those of you that are doing golf up block pool leagues, and how to have fun with that during the season as we kind of get into the more fun tournaments here moving forward. And then obviously looking ahead at the Farmers at Torrey Pines. But let's start off with, well, Jon Rahm is back. I'm just going to, he's, dude, that's ridiculous.
It's hard to say he's not.
It's so hard. And two wins in his last three starts. Jon Rahm winning the American Express. American Express. Yep. The American Express at the PGA West Course in California. 27 under is his winning score. Davis Thompson, a name you don't get to see too often, which is kind of cool, at 26 under. And then Xander Schauffele and Chris Kirk, T3, at 25 under. Can you imagine being in Xander Schauffele's shoes, and actually Eric Van Rooyen's shoes as well, and shooting 10 under on Sunday and not coming in first?
Yeah, it's tough.
How are you supposed to recover from that?
Yeah, I mean, you just got to take the positives, I guess, like whatever positives you can from it. You shot 10 under on a Sunday. You did everything you could at that point. I feel like if you shoot 10 under on a Sunday, you don't win. You just have to honestly disregard Sunday and think about everything that happened before that, because that's where you lost the tournament. If you shot 10 under on Sunday.
What's funny enough though, is if you look at his scores, not 170 on the board. Like usually when you don't have a 70 on there and you go 10 under on Sunday, you're probably winning tournaments. However, when you're playing Jon Rahm, who went 64, 64, 65, 68. Yeah. Dude, he's just automatic. Back-to-back 64s on Thursday and Friday. That's scary.
I mean, he's just looking solid again.
Yeah, it's really weird because, like we've talked about this, you know, the last time Jon Rahm won, which was, by the way, just 2 weeks ago. We talked about how last year, it's not like he looked bad. He never looked bad. But he definitely looked like he was in some sort of funk or something or other, where he just wasn't as dominant as we remembered him being, especially in 2020. And then in some points in 2021, I mean, remember he spent March 1st, 2021 to January 31st, 2022, first in the world. Obviously he is back there now. That's not a shock to anybody. But you look at the year that he had in 2022, right? And he only had that one win at the Mexico Open. And you really wonder, was he hurt last year? Or was something up with the equipment? Or was something going on? Because, yeah, he had good performances. But, I mean, especially when it mattered most, when the tournaments were at its biggest, like the Players and the Masters and the PGA Championship. PGA Championship, he was T48. Yeah. That is not Jon Rahm, you know?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think he just put in the work this offseason. Because, what was it, 2 years ago or a year ago he switched over to Callaway?
It was after his absolutely banana lands year in 2020, so I believe he switched to 2021.
So it'd have been 2 years ago that he made that switch. So honestly, I just think having another full offseason and getting to really learn the differences in the clubs that he has and getting confident in swinging the ones that he has now, I feel like is all it took. Because like you said, he wasn't necessarily playing bad. It looked more like he was in a funk. And honestly, that might have just been him just working on the mental aspect of figuring out his distances, figuring out how he swings these clubs at certain courses, and just like not really paying attention to a score as much, knowing that he's making enough money off of sponsors and and honestly, and like placing okay every tournament, that he knew he could just learn the courses with his new clubs, learn how he swings them differently than his old clubs, and just really grind and come back this year with a whole new set of knowledge that he didn't have last year, because golf is like 90% mental. Right. So a whole off season and a whole another year with your new equipment is going to be huge for you. And I think that's what we're seeing.
And, you know, obviously there are cases where like the proper fitting equipment will help amateurs like you and I and most of our listeners. But when it comes to these guys on tour, they all, no matter what clubs they're swinging, what brand they're associated with, whatever team they're sponsored by, all their clubs are fit to exact specifications.
Yeah.
They all have that advantage no matter who they're associated with. So if it took him just kind of figuring out his, you know, the aspect is he went from being on one of the teams with the TaylorMade team and going to a brand new one. So he's got to learn the staff. He's got to get comfortable with the guys there and the buses. He's got to get comfortable with, you know, the balls that he's using, with the clubs that he's using, with the driver and the long irons and woods. A bunch of stuff there that obviously could play a factor. But if that's really what it took, clearly it has been working. Because since September 11th, which was the BMW PGA Championship, which was one of the Euro events, which was kind of when the season got started getting kicked off and he was playing on the European side, that was T2. Since then, he has won, T4, T8, win.
Not bad.
That's your lowest finish at the Hero World Challenge so far this season was still in the top 10. We're looking at Scottie Scheffler numbers here. Obviously, he's not up to four wins on the PGA Tour yet because the two before came on the Euro Tour. But this is like Scottie Scheffler territory right now. This is dangerous.
He's creeping up on it for sure.
And you know what's crazy? His putting at the American Express was horrendous. By the numbers, he was a whole stroke gained below tour average in putting. Absolutely, like brutal. But something that we just recently talked about when we were talking about Tom Kim last week, he was a whole 2.5 strokes gained above the tour average on approach shots. If you can get your approach close, you can still putt like a bum. But if you're two putting from 3 feet away, that's still a par.
Yeah.
If you're getting on in regulation and you're getting yourself close and you're putting yourself in good putting positions, you can still putt poorly and win tournaments, and win tournaments in the fashion of being 27 under, which is nutty. Now, that number, I would like that to resonate with you. 27 under. How are you feeling about, it just seems like the wins nowadays are coming at the rate of 25 plus under. And that's the way that winning on the tour is now. Are you tired of seeing that? Do you think that's boring, or do you like watching these guys just dominate golf courses? I feel like there's two frames of thought about this, so I want to see where your head's at.
Honestly, I think it's just the courses that they're playing on right now. I don't think it's as frequently as it seems like it is in the larger scheme of things. Hawaii, the winds weren't there, and everybody always says it's a lot easier when the winds aren't there. Cali this week, they had the burnt grass. That was this week, right?
Yeah.
With the burnt rough. I don't know about you, but I was talking with Tom from Heck Across America about it. And I think that would make it a million times easier to have the rough burnt like that, because you're not hitting out of the tall stuff, which is everything that you get on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get like less than an inch rough on the East Coast. Whereas Hawaii, they said plays easier when it's not windy. There was like no wind those weeks. This week you have the short rough. There wasn't really a lot of wind either. They said it was pretty calm this week too. So things like that are going to make it a little bit easier. And just in general, I feel like this time of year and on the West Coast swing and even Hawaii a little bit, we see these lower scores. And then as they progress towards the East Coast, the scores get a little bit lower, a little bit lower. And then we hit the Masters, and then we kind of level out at like 10 to 15 under is where you're looking at for wins.
Right. Yeah. And especially when they come back to the East Coast, it's just, it feels like it's such a drastic change from West Coast to even tropical type of golf. Because that always feels like it's more dependent on conditions more than the course itself. Where on the East Coast, if conditions are not, those courses are going to be hard. There's going to be trees. There's going to be thick rough. Yep. I mean, a perfect example is Winged Foot, where the U.S. Open was unfortunately won by the strongest guy there. But remember, he was one of only two people that were even par or under. So it can change when you move coastlines and come to the East Coast. But I just wanted to bring that up because I was talking to my friend today at work, and he's a big golf guy. And he was like, I don't enjoy watching golf when the final scores are 27 under for the win, or like two guys are competing at the top for 26 under. And he doesn't enjoy that. He likes it when the golf course is winning and the golfers really have to think and try harder than they were before. And I kind of agree with him. To me, it's more like, I like to watch these guys. I already know they're good at golf. I don't need the proof on that one. I like to watch them, you know, kind of sweat it out and try and figure out how to play a golf course. They keep finding themselves in spots they weren't trying to be in, and they keep having to lay up, and they got to scramble for par and hopefully don't bogey. You know, that's the kind of PGA golf that I kind of enjoy to watch more than what we were seeing here from California. But I guess there is always a time and a place to just watch good golfers be good at golf, you know?
Yeah, honestly, it doesn't bother me as long as it's close. Like, if the winner's at 26 under and the next closest person is at 18 under, then I'm not having a good time. But, like, this week, there was a slight chance, but there was still a chance of a playoff. And any time that there's a chance of that happening, I think is good golf to watch. I think of it kind of like football, where you can have a shootout, an extremely offensive game, and the score is like 51-48, mm-hmm. or you can have a really good defensive game where the score is like 12-9. And a lot of people are going to look at the 12-9 and be like, oh, that was a really bad game. Just the same as they would look at the US Open having two people under par and be like, oh, everyone played really bad that week. When you look at it in a vacuum like that, it's hard to tell exactly what you're looking at. You have to look at it more in depth. So as long as there's a bit of a challenge there, I'm fine with the low scores.
Right.
Because like, that's what we watch it for. You know what I mean? We don't watch it. I'm not saying everybody, I don't watch it to see the course win or the players win. I watch it to see the competition between the players, whether they admit that there's competition between them or not. There's a different feel in the air when there's a playoff going on.
Right.
And that's what I like watching golf for. Doesn't matter to me whether the guys are tied at 5 under or 25 under when they're in a playoff.
Right. I mean, especially we haven't had one pretty much yet this year, but man, when it comes to like playoff golf, it is crazy, especially when it's 1v1. Like, sometimes they're fun when it's three guys, but when it's mano a mano and it's two guys that, you know, don't like each other.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the best.
And when you're watching a playoff between two guys, to me, I don't care whether I'm watching them absolutely tear up the course or watch the course absolutely tear them up. I'm watching it to watch them and see if there's a little bit of something going on between them during the whole situation.
Right. Yeah. Like, what was it? It was Kevin Kisner was in a playoff. This was just last year. Kevin Kisner was in a playoff with, I forget who, but he walked directly in. It was Scottie Scheffler, actually, I think. It was Kisner and Scheffler were, it might have been a group event, which makes sense why Kevin Kisner was competing for the in playoff. But he walked just directly in front of Scottie Scheffler when Scottie Scheffler was lining up his shot from the fairway. It's that kind of stuff where I know they don't have beef with each other, but we're talking a playoff, man. All bets are off.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
that's the kind of stuff I like.
We could be friends outside of this, but it's playoff time, man, and I'm gonna rattle you if I can.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, when you really think about it more, obviously what you said, there's a distinct difference between East Coast and West Coast golf, and the scores always do seem to be lower on the West Coast, and that's because sometimes when the weather is moderate, it's not going to be as hard as it would be. I'm a little interested on your point there about the burnt grass, though. I was just thinking about it as you were talking about it. Do you think because the grass is burnt and obviously a bit harder, it would tee up the ball a bit more than like soft, like luscious green grass.
I think so.
It makes sense, right? Because if it's hard, yeah, it would probably hop, but then like rest.
It's probably hard enough to hold the ball up a little bit, but not hard enough that it messes with their swings at all.
Right. But other than the, you know, golf being different on the West Coast and the East Coast, because I think that's one of the biggest differences between this part of the season and the next part of the season. Do you think that this is something that can, you know, continue the let's have less events discourse that's obviously been a big topic of conversation since LIV came on with their very short season and everybody kind of, definitely not guys on the tour. It doesn't really seem like guys on the tour have a problem with it, but golf fans are pretty much clamoring for there to be less events so there's more important events. Do you think that's something like seeing stuff like this where 27 under is the winning score and it seems to be like a normal thing? We'll continue that conversation and maybe affect a change where there are less events and maybe they don't play all the time on the West and they play fewer West Coast events because these guys just dominate over there on that part of the nation.
Honestly, I don't see that being anything that's going to make a change regarding the amount of tournaments that happen. The problem with the amount of tournaments that happen and the problem that everybody has with the amount of tournaments that happen is there's no off season. Like you think about every other major sport, like we've been in how many months now? 2-3 months of baseball off season, and we have like another month or so until pitchers and catchers report.
Mm-hmm.
3 months is enough. Like that's a quarter of the year. Like that's enough. We're ready for it to be back already because we had that time off. Golf is like, okay, here's the end of the season. Guess what? Next week we have a tournament. It's like, okay, hold on. Like, where's the off season? Like these guys have no time to rest. Like if anything, if any sport needs more time off, it's golf, which I don't think anyone would really argue with because a lot of sports have a lot more time off. Like football is like off is off. A lot of teams are off now they're not doing anything until like May after the draft.
And that's just for practice.
That's 5 months.
Voluntary practices.
Yeah, that's 5 months that they don't even have like until voluntary practices. And golf is like, hey, next week, we're back to next season. You don't even have time to figure out what happened this year. You have no time to think about what you did this year. How do you want to change it for next year? Because next week, we're in the next season. And I don't think the West Coast really has anything to do with that because there's tournaments that happen like way before the West Coast swing that are in the new season. And I think, if anything, we should just start the season in Hawaii.
Yeah, and if they just decide to start the season in Hawaii in January, I think a lot of people would agree with that. If we just went from the last tournament of the year, which would be the FedEx Cup Championship, and then just took a break through the beginning parts of the winter, and then just came back in January in Hawaii, I think a lot of people will get on board with that. And I'm wondering if that's something the PGA is looking into, because remember we talked about this, you know, in prior episodes, there are guys on tour bringing that up. And one guy specifically being the most recent champion, Rory McIlroy, talking about that. So also talking about Rory McIlroy winning the championship, I feel like when a golfer wins the FedEx Cup, right? Mm-hmm. Wins the championship in that case, wins all the money in the big trophy, first place. It almost feels like you never have time to be like, yeah, he's the champion. He's the guy. He's at the top of PGA Tour golf right now. He's the winner. You don't have that time to like, obviously there's no like parade for these guys or anything like that. It's like, you don't have time to process that because you're right. The next week there's golf and it's the next season already.
Yeah. And you already got to start thinking about what events you want to play and to meet your quota of events that you have to play.
Yeah, like a lot, some of these like smaller guys, not, I wouldn't say smaller guys, but some of the lesser known guys on tour do have quotas that they have to meet for their sponsorships, for their team, of events that they have to play in. They already have to be thinking about next year's schedule by the time that the year that they're already playing in is winding down.
Yeah.
It's hard, and I think that you might see happier players on the tour if you decide to take that winter rest, but obviously that's something that's up in the air right now, and who really knows what the PGA Tour is going to do about that. But to keep moving forward here, little bit of drama going on between Tiger Woods and, you guessed it, Greg Norman of Live Golf. So to kind of backtrack here, if we remember a couple months ago, back in November, I believe, Tiger was asked some questions about the Live Tour. And here's what Tiger said. So I think there's a few things that need to happen. So there's obviously two lawsuits going on at the minute. There's the PGA Tour versus Liv, and there's this one that's coming up with the DP World Tour in February. Nothing will happen if those two things are still going on, especially, you're limited in what you can do. And then I think from whatever happens with those two things, there's a few things that I would like to see on the Liv side that needs to happen. I think Greg needs to go. I think he just needs to exit stage left. He's made his mark, but I think now is the right time to sort of say, look, you've got this thing off the ground, but no one is going to talk unless there's an adult in the room that can actually try to mend fences. Basically, Tiger used a lot of words in saying that Greg Norman is detrimental to the relationship that that could happen between Liv and PGA. Will they ever be best friends? Were they ever destined to be best friends? No, but it doesn't have to be as contentious as it is. And I think that's what Tiger is trying to say. But this is the way that Jay Monahan and Greg Norman have been at each other's throats has made it completely contentious. And that's why there's the ongoing lawsuits. So basically Tiger is saying Greg needs to quote unquote exit stage left because he's the problem and he's not willing to have decent discourse with the PGA Tour about how to move forward with there being two separate tours. And it looks like Greg has just gotten around to talking about it on Fox News's One Nation with Brian Kilmeade. Never heard of that show in my life, but here we go. Greg Norman was on the show, and here's what he said about Tiger. This is pretty much in response to what Tiger has said about him in his press conferences. Quote, well, I think, yeah, a little sad for Tiger. You know, unfortunately, he made a comment that he doesn't know the facts about because obviously I'm still here. Obviously, he doesn't control what we do with Liv. So just making those comments, I think, is an indication that he might be a bit of a mouthpiece for the PGA Tour to try and get us to create or get turmoil created internally within Liv. I got to tell you, Greg Norman, We were singing your praises a couple of times about how you definitely know what you're doing when it comes to building a business. Good on you. Not taking that away from you. Very bold business decision to attempt to take on Tiger Woods. That's not going to go well for you at all.
It's not, because as much money as the Saudi Arabians have and the Live Tour have, to be able, like, if it does end up going towards a lawsuit or anything like that, you got to remember, Tiger Woods turned down what they claimed was basically a blank check, which means he's doing all right, too. And he'll be able to get just as good lawyers. It's not going to go as easily as Greg Norman thinks it's going to go if they do end up butting heads. Because guess what? Tiger Woods is the reason that golf is where it's at right now. Uh-huh. So everybody's going to back him up. 100%. There's people that like even the people that love the Live Tour. If you're like, if you ask someone and they say they love Live Tour and you say, how do you feel about Tiger Woods? It'd be like, Tiger Woods is awesome because he's Tiger Woods. Like, you're never going to have the backing that Tiger Woods has. And going head to head with him just goes to show more and more that the Live Tour is just a drama league, is literally all it is. Yes. They're based around making headlines via drama and then making that somehow work for them. Speaking of headlines, I do want to get your opinion on this real quick. We don't have to talk about it like at length because it's just a thing. But how do you feel about the CW signing the Live Tour to a TV deal?
I was going to talk about that right after this, but the CW signing the Live Tour is really weird because this seems like a situation of a failing television network attempting to save themselves with a not yet proven golf tour that has just turned around and decided to go head to head against Tiger Woods.
Yeah, it seems like you're right. And from both perspectives, it just seems like two people kind of throwing a Hail Mary.
Desperation.
Not as popular anymore as it used to be. I don't know if it ever was popular, but definitely not popular now.
Well, they used to have some good shows. And then I think those shows got bought up by streaming services. And then the streaming services have pretty much taken all the good shows from there.
And now I think they just play Law and Order on repeat.
Pretty much. It's just Law and Order.
Not sure. But yeah, it does. It just seems like a Hail Mary for both of them, kind of trying to save what they got going. I don't know. It's weird.
Which, you know, for as far as the Live Tour is concerned, this is what they were looking for. They were looking for a TV contract. Yeah. And they got one. Is this the channel that they wanted to get? Probably not, but they
exactly.
wanted to get
Exactly. That's my thing is it seems like they're settling.
Yes.
I'm sure they reached out to every major sporting TV like network, which obviously everyone is going to say no. But even if they were able to get like a TNT or like I don't remember what the other show, channels are like around there, but like something like that, where it's not
like
necessarily
Freeform or USA or one of those.
Well, not Freeform, because that's Freeform is Disney, and Disney would never do that.
Oh right, yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, like USA, TNT, like something where like every once in a while they have a basketball game on, but otherwise it's like random like TV shows and
right.
movies and stuff like that. Would probably have been the best place for them to land, and I think they kind of aimed high and then fell low.
Well, obviously, one of the major roadblocks when it comes to a TNT or a CBS or a Fox is all three of those major networks broadcast major PGA events. I like that. We know CBS does the Masters.
Yeah,
I believe Fox does the PGA Championship. We know that the TNT does the matches every time they happen. Yeah. Like they do major PGA events, and the Live Tour is like, would you wanna maybe do our stuff? And they're like, look, if we even thought about bringing you on, we'd lose our major contract with the PGA Tour, and we're not willing to do that. So,
and that's,
you know, my thing though is I thought they had a pretty decent thing going with YouTube TV, because here's the thing about YouTube TV, it is becoming rapidly one of the more used, I guess you could call cable service. A lot of people are switching to YouTube TV because of how versatile it is in comparison to actual cable, right? And last year, they had all of their events broadcast on YouTube TV exclusively. If they just kept doing that, I think that would be more beneficial than if they did this CW deal. Because if they keep moving forward with YouTube TV, that's kind of the future of television, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at moving forward instead of attempting to move backwards into cable, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm not saying cable's failing by any means, but I mean, major cable companies are having a tough time keeping customers because their rates are rising and YouTube TV is offering $60, $70 flat a month with customizable channel plans.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that if they had that contract with YouTube TV and they were like, hey, you can only watch live events on YouTube TV, but it's for everybody. Like anybody who has a YouTube TV plan can watch this event. You don't have to have a special sports package or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think that'd be perfect. But now they got the CW, which, no offense, but anybody with streaming services isn't chomping at the bit to get CW on there.
Because they're not even on like a streaming service. Like if you have Paramount, you can watch NBC shows.
Yep.
CW is not involved in any of the streaming services.
No.
And think about the audience that Liv is going for is younger people around our age who don't have cable. Like it just doesn't make much sense.
Yep.
Just doesn't make much sense. It seems like they almost just did it to say that they have a cable channel that they can work with, and maybe this seems like a stepping stone. It seems like that's all they're planning it as, is just a stepping stone.
And maybe the only saving grace here might be that the CW is planning on just starting a streaming service, and this is their like pinnacle. They're like, maybe. Yes, we're starting a CW streaming service where you can get all of the Live Golf content you want. You know.
But that's really, how much can you charge for that, though, you know?
I don't know. They'll probably charge
15. Because you're not going to get anything else on the CW. Like,
yeah, I mean, you'll get
watch
Law and Order,
as much Law and Order as you want, and then you can also watch the Live Golf Tour. That's
Live
it.
Live Golf, Law and Order. These are your two options. Welcome to the CW.
That'll be $15 a month. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, yeah, you're right. It would, like, how much could you charge for that, and how many people do you think you'd be able to get for it, you know? definitely a weird step for the LIV Tour to take, but I guess we'll see how that transpires with that contract. And obviously we'll see how Greg Norman versus Tiger winds up, because I'm sure Tiger's going to say something back. Just don't know what, but it'll be something and it'll probably be funny. All right, last little bit here before we talk about the Farmers fantasy golf. So my buddy at work, he has this fantasy golf black pool type of situation that he does with him and his buddies and a bunch of other people. And I'm going to get involved. This is my first foray into fantasy golf. Now, the way that they're doing it, and I don't know if this is the way that it goes for most fantasy golf leagues, but the points are based off of that player's earnings. So every tournament, you get to pick a new two guys, right? You get to pick a new two PGA Tour pros who are playing that week. For majors, it's three. And your points are based on that guy's earnings. And that's how many points you get, right? So if a guy gets cut and gets no earnings, he's getting you 0 points. You know, but if a guy gets like 10th or 8th, he's getting you that much more points in the grand scheme of things. But then you're not attached to those players. You just pick another two the next week, or if it's a major, you get to pick another three. I think this is a really cool concept. It does feel a little bit more like a pick'ems league than a fantasy league.
Yeah, definitely.
The way he was explaining how they did it last year was they picked two guys that they rode the entire year. And then every week they'd pick a new two. So every week you'd have four guys, two that you pick at the beginning of the year, that those were your guys that you were strapped.
They were like your keepers?
Yeah, they were like your keepers. So either way, I think both of those sound super fun. So for those of you that kind of want to get a little bit more involved in watching golf and being and following along and feel like you want to get a bit more involved, I know that fantasy sports does that for pretty much any other sport. And I think it could be beneficial to fantasy golf. This is my first time doing it, and I think I'm going to have a good time doing it.
I like the idea of two keepers, and then every week you pick two new guys.
Right.
That's a cool concept.
I mean, right now they're kind of doing more of a block concept, but either way. But because I'm doing fantasy golf, every time now on the podcast that we talk about the next week, we're going to find out who Brian has as their picks. Right. Am I going to follow Rob Bolton's picks? No. I will not be doing that because I am a sensible human being. I feel like you just can't, you know.
Fair.
Just Rob, if you were just better, you know, just better at what you do. Speaking of which, do we have a Rob?
I believe we do have maybe not Rob, but I believe we do have a power rankings for the week.
I guarantee you it's Rob because they wouldn't let anybody else do it. Yep, there he is, Rob Bolton.
The
myth, the legend. So the interesting thing, right, is that when it comes to this, there is a hierarchy of like who you get to, like who gets to pick first. Okay. And it's, I believe it's who has the most points in the league, I believe it's who has the least amount of points in the league at the time gets to pick first for that week. I'm not quite sure yet, but okay. I'll find out. But I'll just give you my projected two people I would like to have, right? But it's power ranking time, Rick. You know what the deal is. I'm going to list to you the top five in no specific order, and you're going to have to list them in the proper order. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All righty. Colin Morikawa, Xander Schauffele, John Rahm, Will Zalatoris, and Tony Finau.
Wow. Star-studded cast.
It's very nice. Very nice.
All right. I'm going to go... You said Xander was one of them, right?
Yep.
All right. I'm going to go Tony 5, Colin 4, Xander 3... No, John Rahm 3, Xander 2, and who was the last one, Scotty?
Will Zalatoris.
Will Zalatoris 1.
Yeah. I like the mix-up. I do. Not correct.
Was that completely wrong?
I like the mix-up. Not completely wrong. You were off to a hot start when you had Colin Morikawa fourth. I thought you were going to run the table, and then he threw me a curveball there. So number five, Will Zalatoris. Number four, Colin Morikawa. Number three, Tony Finau. Number two, Xander Schauffele. And number one, John Rahm.
I didn't think he'd put John Rahm one because of how hard it is to win back-to-back.
It is, but like I feel when we get into his explanation, it will explain his thought process here. And this is one of those moments where I don't think I can disagree with Rob Bolton, which is weird because if there's one thing I love to do, it's disagree with him. It's one of my favorite things. But number five, let's find out why Will Zalatoris. Only so much he could do until Luke List slammed the door in his last year's playoffs. Zalatoris also posted a T7 here in 2021. All eight rounds since returning from an injured back are sub-70s. Yeah, he's had some success at this course before, including being in a playoff last year against Luke List. And he's coming off that back injury, and he's playing well coming off the back injury. So interesting to see if he makes, a very classic Will Zalatoris leap into the limelight. It seems like there's always this one tournament every, six or seven tournaments where he's contending for the first spot or he winds up in a playoff. And you're like,
yeah,
you could do this so much more consistently. I don't understand why you don't. But obviously he had a back issue. So I'm interested to see. I kind of like him in the five spot here with the sub-70s coming off the injury.
Yeah, definitely.
Number four, Colin Morikawa. He took the last 2 weeks off, but you know that he's been itching to get back after the disappointment at Kapalua. Finished T4 in his last trip to Torrey Pines for the 2021 U.S. Open. It feels like Colin Morikawa is in a weird spot too. You know?
Yeah. Your namesake carries a lot in golf, though.
It does, and he is Colin Morikawa, obviously, a well-decorated PGA Tour golfer. But let me go on a date of golf real quick. I'm trying to see if my thoughts about his game right now actually line up with what's happening. Okay, let's see how he wrapped up 2022. All right, he didn't play in 2022. The last tournament he played in 2022 was the Tour Championship. So the first, no. Okay. So he did play in the Zozo and the CJ and the Worldwide Tech. So T45, T29, T15, 6-2 at the Century Tournament of Champions. So I guess he's trending in the right direction, but last year it felt like he was pretty much a non-factor all season. Didn't get a win and only had a handful of top tens. But it looks like he's trending in the right direction. So, again, I kind of understand where Rob Bolton's coming from with this, this four pick here. This is one I always love. I just love seeing Tony Finau in the top five, number three, Tony Finau with career best form. The 33-year-old is a fixture in every power rankings, but especially this one in eight editions of the Farmers. He's cashed seven times, all four top 25, four were top tens.
Not bad.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm eyeing up Tony Finau here.
Four top tens. I don't know if that's enough to put him in the three spot for me, but I don't hate it.
I don't hate it either. But this is a guy I might be eyeing up for a pick in a pick'ems league. You know, number two, Xander Schauffele. There's another Xander in town with Bogaerts joining the Padres. Ooh, a little baseball reference out of Rob Bolton there. Xander Bogaerts joining the Padres, but it'll always be home for this La Jolla native. In 2021, T2 at the Farmers, T7 in the U.S. Open, T3 with an albatross last week. Xander's obviously been playing a lot better. It's very noticeable when you see the way he's playing. Again, we talked about his 10 under on Sunday, this last tournament at the American Express. He's playing well. I think there's definitely a win somewhere in the next couple of weeks. I just don't know if this star-studded Farmers lineup is where he's gonna get one, but I mean look, he had the albatross last week, a T3 with a 10 under on Sunday, coming off a T2 last year at the years ago at the Farmers. Not bad.
We didn't even mention the albatross when we were talking earlier.
I know. Insane. So Xander Schauffele is clearly playing some of his best golf, which is nice to see. It's very nice to see.
Can you imagine hitting an albatross?
No, I like thinking about an albatross is almost, it's almost like something I can't quite mentally process, because even getting a birdie is like something big for me, you know?
Yeah.
Let alone getting a whole other type of bird, you know?
Yeah. I think I'd be more excited at this point about an albatross than another hole in one.
Right.
because I know I can hit my wedges and short clubs well. My wedges, my nine, my eight. I feel like I can hit those pretty consistently and well. But if I'm hitting an albatross, that means I'm hitting at least a wood. And
oh, yeah.
If I manage to put it in the hole with a wood, that's enough for me. I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, I mean, let's remember his second shot was 225 yards out.
That's what I'm saying. That's at least a 4-iron on a good day for me.
Over
which
water,
is impossible to hit. What?
Over water, by the way.
Yeah,
up
no
to the
way.
Front of the green. There's no shot either of us make that kind of hit. But obviously, you're right. If you're making an albatross, even on a par four, even a short par four, you have at least 130 in, you know, 120, arguably. So, I mean, you know, I don't think I could ever mentally process hitting an albatross because something immaculate would have had to happen for that to transpire. Something just truly bizarre would have had to happen. All right, number one, John Rahm. It says here from Rob Bolton. Duh. That's it. That's all it says.
That's all the explanation you need.
It's true, though. I mean, dude, he's just playing so well right now. It's hard to discount him. Obviously, winning back-to-back, yes, is very difficult to do on the PGA Tour. But if anybody's going to do it, John Rahm's probably a solid pick, right? Like, obviously, he did miss... He did miss the Sony Open in between the Tournament of Champions and the American Express. But technically, in his starts, he's already won back-to-back.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously, in calendar weeks, back-to-back is a lot harder than a lot of people give credit for. So that's why I don't know if John Rahm is the obvious number one pick, but it's about as obvious as it could get.
I think I don't see him being outside the top 10 this week with how he's playing right now.
No, definitely not. So for my pick'ems, two guys, obviously if John Rahm is still on the board, that's a no-brainer. He's just going to get you points whether he wins or not. But my guess is he's probably not going to be there by the time, unless I'm picking first for us by some act of God, he's probably not going to be there. So I would like to have Tony Finau. And give me Tony Finau. And you want to know what? I'm going to take Sungjae Im while I'm at it. Last year, T6 at the Farmers.
Not bad.
Not too shabby, right? That's points. And I'm trying to think realistically about guys who are going to be on the board, you know? And Sungjae Im's been playing well so far this season. So I kind of like that. Tony Finau, I'm pulling for you, kid. I'm pulling for you. But all right, Rick, unless you have any other golf news, that's going to do it.
Yeah, no, that's it for me.
All righty, folks. As always, thank you so much for listening to From the Tips. We love that you guys just enjoy our content and listen to us talk about golf all the time and whatever other tangents we tend to get on. Just really exciting that you guys continue to listen, which is Banana Lands to us. So thank you as always. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod and on Twitter at @FTT_pod. Please go follow both so you guys can get the content that we'll deliver to you. Obviously, we'll be a little bit more active during the summer when golfing is going to be happening, basically. And we'll be more active on Twitter too as the tournaments get a little bit more exciting and the tension grows and gets bigger. Go ahead and if you want to do kind of a, not necessarily a watch party, but a watch along, I'll be either Rick or myself will be pretty active on Twitter. Once that documentary drops on February 15th, we're going to be watching it. You guys can follow along with us on Twitter. We'll be tweeting about it. We'll be watching the episodes. It's going to be kind of cool. So as always, thank you so much. Go follow us on both those platforms and we out.
Thanks, guys. See you later.